Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of She's the Barista. Yeah, hello. It's very great to have you back, and hello to everyone who is listening for the first time. This podcast is kindly supported by Rancilio Germany. Thank you so much for making this possible. And this week's episode is very special for me. It's the first interview that I'm having with a coffee person that I haven't actually met in person, but I have seen her on the competition stage and she just absolutely blew my mind. She's one of the most known baristas in the US. And I think since the World Barista Championship in 2021, the whole world knows her because she has placed an incredible second place. Let's welcome her.
And here she is, Andrea. I'm so excited. Hello.
Hey, I'm excited too. I hope you're doing well.
I am very well. It is New Year's Eve. And I already wanted to tell you and my listeners that if you hear loud bangs in the background, that's possibly because in Germany, New Year's is like the purge. So everyone gets fireworks and they're all having a ball outside. So yeah, no one's getting violent outside. I hope no one's getting hurt outside. But yeah, fireworks are everywhere. So sorry if there's a loud bang.
Cool.
That's the story for me. I'm in Berlin and it's purge season. But Andrea, first of all, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, I've just been working a little bit this morning at one of our cafes. We've been pretty busy. And so, yeah, I'm just going to be heading out after this and trying to enjoy New Year's Eve. I'm very excited about the new year. I don't know that I typically am, you know, as the new year rolls over, very super excited about like a new chance or new goals or things like that. But for some reason this year, I just feel like it's a fresh start and I can't wait. So yeah.
Amazing. For all of our listeners that might not know exactly where you're based, can you tell them where in the world you are located and what you are doing there?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm from the US and then I'm from the state of Arkansas in the city of Springdale. And I'm the co-founder of Onyx Coffee Lab, and I run our operations here for Onyx. So I do lots of people managing and logistics managing and things like that. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
I'm actually really, really excited because I really wanted to talk to you about Onyx Coffee Roasters because you are a co-founder. And for me, after doing a couple of interviews with a couple of people and being in this job for, I don't know how many years now, it's still very rare to meet a female business owner, not in general, but of like a specialty coffee roastery that's actually like really worldwide known. And I remember the first time I drank an Onyx coffee, and it was, I think, 5 years ago, and was just blown away by the design even, and by the fact that it is so, for me as a European, so different to the normal US standard, because I do have to say, I find a lot of the US roasters quite heavy and dark. I think it has a lot to do with your culture and yeah, the history of coffee drinking. But when I tried this Onyx, it was a natural Ethiopian. I was blown away. It just had everything. It had strawberry, it had a lollipop. It was super perfectly developed. And I remember that I drank it, and because it had to travel, it was, I think, a month old for a filter. And it was still so popping and so bright and so beautiful. But I'm rambling off my extra question. I just wanted to tell you.
No, that's awesome.
I remember this coffee so vividly and it was beautiful.
That sounds so good. Thank you.
But my question is actually, how did it all start? So when did you become a co-owner and what was your role in this business when you started that business?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's kind of a long story. So we've basically, So when I graduated from high school here in the States, I Loved going to coffee shops. Now, granted, I did not like coffee, but I liked going to coffee shops. And so I went to the university that's here in my city, and I just thought, oh, the natural thing to do is for me. I needed a job, and I was like, I'll just get a job at a coffee shop. So I worked at a shop all through when I was at university. And basically, when I got done with school, I just had no idea what I wanted to do. I have like a liberal arts degree, and that doesn't really give you a job. And so I was thinking about continuing going to school, but I didn't get accepted anywhere. And so there was a management position open at the shop I was at. And I just felt like, oh, I could do that. Yeah, I love the shop. I love coffee. I love serving people. And I felt like the shop could do better than it was. So I felt like the service could be better. I felt that our coffee skills could be better. And so I just jumped in and just took over this little shop. And, just looking back, it's so funny that just now me being on the other side, like my behavior was funny. Just I'm like just naturally want to be in charge of things. And so, I just took over the shop. And so I basically managed that shop for a couple of years. And the company I was working with had several shops around town. So at one point they were having some just like issues at one of their other shops. So I moved over there and managed there for a while. And then I ended up managing several of the cafes at one time. And so basically the owners of that shop, they just kind of came in one day and they were like, gosh, we just can't wait till we can get rid of these shops. We don't really want to do it anymore. And I just told them, I said, hey, well, when that happens, let me know. And they were like, okay. And then a few months later, they came back and they're like, no, really, we really want to sell. Are you interested? And I was like, well, absolutely. And so at the time, I had just gotten married to my husband, John, and we were 25 years old. And so my dad helped us get a loan from the bank, and we bought two coffee shops. So that's like really how we got started. And still at this time, this is 2008. I still knew nothing about coffee. I knew tons about management and scheduling and drink making and, training and workflow and all of that kind of stuff. But my coffee education was, I'm almost completely self-taught. And I just learned how to make drinks at the shop, but I knew nothing about roasting or sourcing or even dialing in espresso. I like to think that that's actually my main coffee skill set, but even all of that, I just did it by feel and smell and sight and taste, and I didn't have any training at all. And so we ran those shops as they were for probably 2 years. And then my husband was a musician at the time, and he was traveling, and he ended up leaving, quitting music and coming home and just working full time with me. And he's always bored. So he was telling me, he said, Andrea, it doesn't make sense that we're not growing as a business. We weren't roasting. We should be roasting our own coffee. We should be serving pour overs. We should be doing all of these things. And I'm kind of what I like to think of as like a wet towel. I'm like just kind of not, I'm better now, but I'm not into change, and I just told him, I said, hey, what we're doing is working. Why would we ever do anything different? And fortunately, I was wrong and I didn't win that argument because he bought a roaster and started roasting. And after about a year, we were like, yeah, coffee, there's a lot to coffee. And we still didn't know a ton, but we were really starting to learn all about like just the potential of flavor that coffee has. And I think a lot of us kind of go through this journey where, we drink cappuccinos or we drink coffee with a little cream, or even we just drink black coffee, but we have this limited idea of what coffee could really taste like. So as he started roasting and we started getting different kinds of coffees in and we started doing different kinds of roast profiles, I was like, wow, this coffee really, like, it really tastes like blueberries, or it really tastes like, caramel or nuts or chocolates or, lemon or whatever those little, like, really intricate, delicate flavors are in coffee. And so we just kind of realized that we weren't maximizing on all of the, like, things that was a potential for coffee. And so we decided to rebrand our cafes as Onyx Coffee Lab. And our hope was just that we could set ourselves apart from what we had been doing, which I don't think was bad in any way. It was just a different form of coffee service. And so we rebranded and we went all in. I mean, we started doing pour overs. We had a siphon brew bar. We did, we had like five different brew methods. We were just doing all kinds of stuff to help our community experience coffee. And so, especially here in our area, there weren't any specialty cafes at the time. So for us, like, to kind of step out, I mean, we were really educating almost every customer, and people didn't know what a pour over was. People didn't know what a cupping was, like, flavors in coffee. I just had to continually explain, like, no, we're not putting flavor in the coffee. Like, the flavor notes on the coffee are just what is inherent in the coffee. And yeah, I mean, so that's really how we got started. And my role in all of that is was the I mean, I was the head manager. I did all the scheduling and ordering. I did all of the training of our baristas. And any new project that needed implementation, I made it happen. So I take all of the ideas that my husband has, and I, like, make them happen in our business and in our cafes. So I'm kind of doing the same job. It's just that now I have a team to help me instead of it being just me, which is amazing. But yeah, that's how we got started.
What kind of roaster did you buy when you first started? So what
We
batch
got,
size was it?
yeah.
Because you like this is a big question for everyone who wants to open a cafe
Yeah.
roastery. So where do you start?
So we got a Diedrich IR12. So it's a 12 kilo roaster, and we still have it. We still use it every day. But we also now have a Diedrich 35 kilo and a Diedrich 70 kilo. So the 35 kilo we just got like 3 weeks ago, and we got it installed and it's up and running, and it's made our roasting team's lives so much easier, which
Yeah,
is great.
I can
But
imagine.
yeah, so but we started with an IR12, and for the first like 3 or 4 years, that's all we needed. And there definitely got a point where we were roasting, 5 days a week from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. We were really like maxing it out. But yeah, I mean, I think starting small makes sense, because especially when you're a smaller roaster, I think you don't have the need, or maybe even the like capital for the space and the like all the things that you need when you have those bigger roasters. So, our roaster started off, well, it started off in a small warehouse, but we very quickly moved it into one of our cafes, and it was in the cafe for several years, which was
Yeah,
really beneficial for our
absolutely, yeah.
customers to see and like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? It's like, oh yeah, that's a great question. We're roasting coffee. And especially here in the States, I mean, it's a little better now, but at the time, I mean, nobody had any idea what a coffee roaster looked like or sounded like or smelled like. I mean, it's just totally new for our area. And so yeah, it was really great to have the roaster there in the cafe.
Absolutely. It's really funny because I think I like properly learned roasting on a 12 kilo Diedrich.
Oh, cool.
Which is really rare in Europe because Diedrich is an it is from the US, right? I'm
Yeah,
wrong.
it's from
Oh, it is.
Idaho.
Yeah. And we placed it in the cafe and we put a glass wall in front of it. And it's
Cool.
such a yeah. And it is really funny because there's a lot of roasteries that have to do this in Berlin because like we've got such limited space. Our shops, the shop that I used to work at is in a like in a normal
residential area in a normal building with four stories on top of it. So you
Wow.
have to make sure that the exhausts work, that it's not too loud, it's not too broomy or zoomy or whatever. And yeah, warehouse or like, especially like space is so, so rare in Europe.
Yes.
It is so hard to get to. But having the roaster in the shop is so beneficial. Like, of course, you have to have all of the security and of safety measures, but it gives you this whole vibe and this romantic kind of like entrance to talk to the customers, which is really beautiful. And then you said that you had a siphon bar and you served like five different methods and everything. Would you still recommend doing this for like shop owners, or is this, because I would say this is something very like 2012 to 2013?
Totally.
It
yes,
is,
that's
right?
Exactly,
it
is. The time, yeah, it's exactly the time frame.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say no, but I will say that now we only do one method, so we use Kalita Wave is what we do now. And I think it depends on what you want to accomplish. For us, we were really trying to show our customers all of the things you can do with coffee. And we needed those things to help us. So just as an example, the siphon bar was very rarely ordered, but we would just make them like one or two every couple hours.
And it is like moths to the light. Everyone is just like, what
yes.
is this?
What are you doing, you know? And so I think that, I mean, for us now, there's, it's not practical, I don't think, to train everyone to do it. And also, you know, I think that we just don't have the same point of view that we did then. But I definitely think for people that are wanting to showcase, you know, the body to clarity, like scale and coffee, or people that are really wanting to make a statement, people that need something to help engage customers, I think they're great. So, you know, I think it just depends on like, where are you and what are you trying to do? What's the identity of your shop? So,
and it's also, yeah. I think it's a question about the size of the shop. I think when you're growing in Wood Onyx, obviously did, like you grow enormous. There comes the point where it's like, oh yeah, okay, this is not practical anymore. We can't train a person how to make five different like brew methods because they can't all remember. What did you serve batch brew?
We do, yeah.
Yeah. Is this for you a good option to, because so personally I absolutely love batch brew. This is the
Me
thing
too.
That I order everywhere because I think if someone is able to dial in a good batch brew, I know that they know coffee. That's what I feel, or that's what I think, or it gives you like a very clean and clear structure of what the coffee actually is. So
yes,
it's very hard to make a good batch brew out of a terrible coffee. Whilst when you do a hand brew, you can like, there's like certain things that you can like manipulate, I think. And it is so practical. Like you can make, I don't know what, I always do like 1.5 liters at a time. It takes you five minutes and you're done. So in Berlin, especially, it's not very common yet in Europe because the filter coffee culture has been neglected so much in the 90s and been like frowned upon by the latte macchiato generation, I would say. Which is very different to the US because you still have a lot of filter coffee going on. But I think slowly, especially like in the business districts, it's like re-emerging that filter coffee, and like batch brew can be like an absolute like killer coffee. It's going to be so good. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so fun. I love batch brew, and I always talk about like when I'm on a trip, I just always tell John, I'm like, I can't wait to come home to my batch brew. Cause it's just like, it's so good and I love it. So
yeah, cool. We're absolutely on the same page there.
That's fun.
Well, thank you so much for the insights, because it looks like you started as a manager of like a lot of cafes and took them over, and you're still in HR, so you kept your roots, but you expanded your portfolio, I would say. Is it okay for you if I ask you a little bit more of like a personal question that's also
Sure.
has to do a little bit of okay, cool, thank you. So I have seen that you are a mother of two absolutely adorable
Yes.
kids.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
So how hard is it to combine your career, especially because you are a person that wants to compete and that wants to move forward and that wants to go on? And
Yeah.
how do you manage this with motherhood and with the coffee industry?
Yeah. That's a great question. That's actually a question I get asked a lot, and it's really hard. So there's a lot of sacrifice involved in this, and just in my normal work life, I'm really fortunate because I have the ability to have what I would think of in the US as normal hours. So I can leave work by like 5 o'clock. I have some flexibility just in terms of like today it's New Year's Eve. I brought my 7-year-old daughter with me to work, like, and she hung out in the cafe for a couple of hours. So there is some flexibility there. And since my husband and I both work here, we can, rotate if we need to take off with them. I have some people that help me with the kids. And one of my older daughter is in school, which is great. But really, like this past competition season, I have practiced so much, and in a more normal time, which is pre-COVID, I would take like half of my workday for months, and I would delegate my things to my team, which I'm lucky to have, and then I would practice. But since COVID has happened, things have just been really hectic and intense, and there's just a ton to do. And so this leading up to the World Barista Competition in October, I did all of my practicing at night. I would work a full day, and then I would, take like a 10-minute break, and then I would practice at night, and I get home at like 10 o'clock at night and not even see my kids for 4 to 5 days a week. And so I don't necessarily think a great parenting decision, but I just tell myself, I'm like, hey, it's okay to for the kids to see you working really hard for something, and it's okay for them to sometimes know that like I'm not there because I'm trying to help our business be successful and ultimately help our family be successful. So I think sometimes we have to make those choices and those sacrifices. So yeah, it's hard, and I think sometimes I do a really great job balancing everything, and sometimes I don't. So, it just is, I try to make sure that they know that I love them, and I try to make sure that when I'm with them that I'm as engaged as I can be, and that I'm trying to put my phone down more at home because I'm always getting questions, and I'm always, from work, and I always have things going on, so I'm trying to create more like intentional time with them. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to do all the things that you want to do professionally and then also be a parent. So it's hard.
Did you ever compete before you had kids?
I competed 1 year before I had kids. Yeah.
And then afterwards, when you had a child, was that a point where you actually thought about competing, or were you just like, I can't?
Yeah. So I competed 1 year before I had my first daughter, but then I've competed every year since then. And so basically, I mean, I got into competition because my first year was 2014, I think. And basically, we were at a point where we were roasting coffee and we were trying to grow our wholesale business. And it was just really challenging because we were a new roaster and no one knew who we were. We couldn't really get anyone to try our coffees. And we felt like, hey, we think our coffees are good, but nobody is really interested. So my husband saw the World Barista Competition, I think, in 2013, and saw that there was a regional competition just a few hours away from here. And he was like, "Hey, you should check this out. I think you'd be interested in it. I think you'd be good at it. And it would be great for us if you could go and do well because it would help us make a name for ourselves. And it would help when we're trying to like show people our coffees, we could be like, oh, well, we placed in this competition. Like our coffees are good. Try them, please." And so at first I was sort of like, oh, I don't need to do that. I know I'm a good I know I'm a good barista. I don't need to prove it. And he was just explaining to me, yeah, but I know you're a good barista too, but if you could show other people that, it would really help us. And so I went and I did really bad. I mean, I just didn't know. I had read the rules, but I didn't understand them. And I just went and made I made good coffees, but they just didn't score well because I didn't know how it worked, And it was actually really embarrassing for me. I mean, I think that's something that women navigate in a different way than men do. I feel like I've seen men in competitions not do as well, and they're like, oh, I was right, they were wrong. I'm gonna come back and prove that. And they're not as like embarrassed. And for me, I was just like, wow, that was humiliating. I know I know what I'm doing, and I just came here to this place where I just am totally out of my element. So I left that competition, and as I was driving out of the city, I was like, I'm never doing this again. But like 2 weeks later, I was like, you know what? I can do it. I just didn't know the rules, and I could learn the rules and go back and like I could do better. And I'm really com I mean, it's probably obvious, but I'm really competitive. So that's when I started going back, and the next year I had my daughter, and I went and competed with a little baby, and that was a whole nother thing. But I made the US final, or not the finals, I made our national competition that year, and then we were like, okay, we can really do this. And so I made the finals of the US competition every year since then, and then finally made it to Worlds in 2020. So yeah.
So you said you competed the first time in 2014, right?
Yes, yeah.
So that's 6, 7 years in a row.
Yep.
Holy
Yep.
moly.
Yeah, I went every year, and 1 year I went to the US finals and I was 8 months pregnant. So I was like a
Oh
giant, I had a giant belly.
The bloop with the internet. And I'm
No, I'm
hearing more explosions
sorry.
outside. I'm so sorry.
That's funny.
Nonetheless, we're just going to continue fluidly in our conversation because you
Yeah.
said you were in your 8 month of your pregnancy
Yes.
and you were standing in
Yeah.
front of. I'm
Yeah.
so impressed. I mean, I'm getting
Oh
to
my
the age
gosh.
where I'm just like, it's literally, Andrea, every single year, I'm like, holding it off because I'm like, oh no, I want to do one more competition. I want to do one more competition. I want to do one more
I
competition. And then
know.
every year I'm deciding like because every time I don't succeed, I find like another loophole. So I'm just like, oh,
Yes.
didn't do well in Brewers. So I'm gonna do didn't do well in Brewers. So I'm gonna do Brewers or I'm gonna do Coffee and Goods Brewers. Whatever. And now I have this like
Yeah.
white spreadsheet of competitions that I want to do, and Coffee and Goods Brewers is always on there. And I'm like, oh.
I
This is really
know.
hard.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
it's
it is.
very, very empowering and very inspiring for me as a woman who is at
Yeah.
that stage of her life, realizing, all right, there's the clock is definitely ticking. To hear that you just did it, that you just went through with it, and that you, that you just have such a competitive personality and such a bite, which I think, yeah. As a competitor, we all join in this. And how many times in the US championships did you place twice? I think 3 times, huh?
Yeah, so
Second, I mean, yeah.
I placed second 3 times, and then the year I
Oh.
was pregnant, I got fifth. Yeah. So,
Which is
yeah, I
incredible.
kind of, well, thanks. And you know what happened to me then is that there's this thing called pregnant brain where you just aren't as sharp, and it's a real thing. And in the finals, I did not give tasting notes for my signature drink.
Oh,
and
no.
I didn't even know until after.
Oh, no.
Like, I did it. Then they talk to you, you know, for a minute. Mm. And then as I was leaving the stage, people were just like, you know, saying, oh, good job, you know, all that. And then I found my husband like 10 minutes later, and I was like, oh, I'm so excited. That went really good. And like, I just did great. And he was like, I have to tell you something.
Oh, no.
And he was like, what did I do? And he said, you didn't give tasting notes. And I was like, oh, no.
So annoying. Yeah, this is the first question I always ask when I go off stage. I'm like, did I say everything?
I know. But, you know, it is what it is, you know.
And yeah.
I think for me, especially that year, I feel like there's this thing that happens to women where we're perceived as people that can do things really, really well. But then there's these things like motherhood or pregnancy or, you know, that are perceived as like, oh, well, while you're doing these things, you can't be as good as you were. And for me, in some ways, I think those things, you know, when you have those other things happening, your time is not your own anymore. And so that does compete. But for me, that whole season, I was like, I just want to like show people that women can still do it. Like you can be pregnant and work hard. You can be pregnant and run a business. You can be pregnant and be excellent. And, you know, that was like kind of my whole thing that year was just like, it's okay to like have these other things that are like pulling on my mind and my time and my energy and my body and still do really well. My presentation that year was about legacy. And I really just kept thinking the whole time, like, I want my kids to know that I did something really special while I was still doing this other thing of being pregnant. So
it is terrifying. Like, it is absolutely terrifying. And I don't know. Everyone just always assumes it's like, it should be the like most natural thing and you should just like get along with it. But it is, especially if you have this drive and you want to have this career and stuff like this, it's just like so scary. It is, I think it was for me like the most scary thing in my entire life would be imagining to become pregnant. That's why I said earlier, like, you're such an inspiration, because like seeing people like you actually succeeding and doing this really well and just showing it is hard work, but it is very doable and you don't have to give up everything else. You just have to work hard. I think that's a message that we need a lot. And I think it can take away some of the scaredness and stuff.
Oh. Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing.
Also, you're gonna do great. There's this amazing thing that happens when you're pregnant, which is you have all of these extra like chemicals and hormones and things that are going on in your body, and it just helps you do it. Like I love being a mom. I think it's awesome. And before I was a mom, I had very low interest in even being a mom. So it's funny, when I was pregnant, I ran into the old owners of the shops that we purchased, and the husband of that couple, he just was laughing, and he said, I thought you were never gonna have kids. He said, do you remember telling me that you were never gonna have kids? And I was like, I do remember that. And you know, things change, and it's okay. Like, it's okay to change your mind, you know. And so I think there's something really special about that. And before I had kids, I had babysat like one time. I had never changed a diaper. I wasn't into kids at all. And so I'm grateful for the way that we are made, and like that going through that process changed my feelings about kids. So
amazing. Yeah. I think I'm still in this limbo where I'm just like, oh, I could have a kid. I could also adopt a pig. It's fine either way.
That's so funny. I love it.
Okay, moving back from the kids topic, going back to your competitions, because
want to talk to you a little bit about Milan. So you came all the way to Italy to compete. And in your first round, you placed ninth. And in the semis, you were actually first, which is well. And then the finals, you placed second, which is incredible. So first of all,
Thank you.
congratulations. Well
Thank
done.
you.
But when I watched this, I have to admit that I personally found the presentation was very risky. I don't know how to put it in other words, because I loved how you talked about the pandemic and about kindness and flavor and touch. So you made it very clear at the start what's your story about. And everyone who hasn't watched the presentation, it's on YouTube, so you can just Google Andrew Allen and then put it in YouTube, and you can see the whole presentation. It only takes 15 minutes. So I think the layout was pretty clear to me. So we all went through like rough time, and you had a lot of cross references, which worked amazing with your coffee.
Thanks.
So I think the first question that I have, when I saw the footage, you put the tables on top, or were those, did you put those tables on top?
Yeah, so for my table settings, I brought like tables with me from the States. They're like a puzzle. They all fit in one suitcase. And then when we got to Milan, we like put them together, and then each table had two of those pieces, and then they just slid together. So during my setup time, I just put those on top and slid them together. It really didn't take much time at all, but it changed the way everything felt.
So can you tell our listeners maybe how much of an effort is to transport all of your Barista
Oh my
Competition gear
gosh.
from the US to Europe,
Oh.
or the other
Oh
way
my
around?
gosh.
How many
Well,
suitcases did you have?
I had seven suitcases and I shipped four giant boxes as well.
My God.
So, and I travel with a lot of gear. So even in the US, I get teased a lot, which I absolutely deserve because my peers are always like, "Is this all for you?" And I'm like, yes, but I'm not you. I'm only using half of it. I just brought lots of extra things, and I brought options, and I brought, I could
Spares.
outfit the whole thing. Yeah, I'm like, if you need something, I am your place. Like, you just come take whatever is on my table. I don't care. You just use anything here because I brought all of it. Yeah, but no, it was a real like physical feat to get everything there, and then we stayed in the city, in the city center, and the convention center was like a 30-minute drive, and our hotel had a elevator sometimes, but
Oh
sometimes it
no.
didn't work. So we were like climbing four flights of stairs with all of these bags, and it was exhausting. So it was really hard, but from the beginning, we were like, this is worlds, so we're gonna go all out, and it's fine if we have to take seven suitcases or if we have to like physically wear ourselves out doing this, because this is like our one shot. So if we're gonna do it, we're just gonna go all out. And so, but yeah, it's a lot. It's just the all the things, it's a lot.
So yeah, every barista competitor ever, be aware there's a lot of equipment. I think I, for Brewers Cup, traveled with one suitcase and one freezer, which is very doable. Yeah, so that was it. Also for me, a very nice experience, because I used to do barista so many times. I'm like, oh God, I'm so sick of this equipment. And then during your performance, you blended into your portafilter on stage, and you used your Eugenoides variety as well. So you, what coffees did you use? You use your Yuji and what else?
A geisha from the
Geisha.
Serra Azul farm in Colombia. Yeah.
So both from Colombia, and the Eugenoides was from Las Nubes, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So these are the two main trends we've seen this year. We've seen like blending, and we've seen using new varieties.
Yeah.
So before the competition, where did you get the idea? And because it's hard to find a trend And then you come to the competition and you look around you and you're like, oh, no one else is doing this. And then you look around and it's like other, like first place, second place, third place, they're all using the same coffee basically.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
How do you find this trend?
Yeah. So, I mean, for us, when we're, and I say us because my husband John and I do all this stuff together, but when we're approaching competition, we're looking around for mainly coffees that are going to score for the judges. So obviously they're going to be incredible coffees. They're going to taste great, but we're really looking for discernible flavor, specifically discernible flavor. Mm-hmm. Those are the two coffees. I mean, they're different like seasons and things, but those are the two coffees I used at the US competition. And we had tasted eugenoides like the last couple of years, like before that, and had thought it was like an incredible coffee, but it's also a very polarizing coffee because it has almost no acidity in it at all. So when you drink it, it's so sweet and it's just interesting to serve it by itself. So it's an incredible coffee, but it also has very consistent flavor. Like it is papaya, tropical fruit, earthy sweetness, no acidity. And it tastes like that no matter what you do to it. Mm-hmm. And you can obviously, you know, tease parts of those things out more. I mean, you know, you can definitely do things to it, but it always tastes that way. So when we started preparing for the US competition, you know, we were like, well, we could play with this. It's risky because it's new. So anytime you bring a new process or a new variety to competition, the risk is that no one has ever had it. And so sometimes judges don't know what to do with it or don't know how to score it or, you know, there's something wrong with it, things like that. I think it had been used in US one time before I used it. But as we were working with it, we just kind of were like, well, it has all of this great sweetness and this really specific flavor. So what if we put it with something that was like totally opposite coffee? So the geisha I used, from the Sara Azul farm is from the bigger, you know, company of Granja La Esperanza. And I have used their coffees every year in competition in some form or fashion. And I love their coffees. I think they do a really great job. And their coffees are incredibly flavorful, very acidic. And they're also just wild. They behave differently depending on, I mean, from shot to shot to shot, you can have a different experience. It's actually been part of my problem that I've been working on the whole time in competition is like, how can I have the same flavor and the same acidity and the same, you know, thing from, you know, both in what I'm serving, you know, on stage, but then also what I experience at home and then what I experience in my practice time and things like that. So the eugenoides like kind of helped stabilize that coffee a little bit. And when I say stabilize, there's nothing wrong with that coffee and their coffees are incredible. So they don't need another coffee, but in terms of competition, what competitors I think, or what I needed as a competitor was just something that could help me be really consistent. The eugenoides really provided that for me. And so I used it in 2020 and that right, like our US competition was right before the pandemic happened. And so I just planned to use the same kind of approach. And so, but yeah, then when I got to Worlds, there were a number of other people using it, which I both felt kind of sad about because I wanted to be the only person using it. But I also was really excited for the producers because, you know, doing that coffee was an incredible risk for them. I mean, the eugenoides species, it's a very low output. It's very hard to grow. They had to get seeds from a seed bank and, you know, cultivate all of that production that they're doing. So I'm friends with them. I care about them a lot. So I was really excited for them because they've been working for this for a long time. So it was cool.
And why did you decide to blend in the porter filter?
Yeah, so the density of the two coffees is really different. So eugenoides is teeny tiny little beans. It's incredibly dense. And then, you know, the geisha is like a larger bean and they just behave differently. So when I first, blend them. The thought was like to put the ultra sweet with the wild acidity and see what happens. And it was incredibly inconsistent when I ground it together, because it was just the coffees just behaved differently. And so then when they got in the portafilter, it was kind of all over the place. And so so we decided to try it with like one on top of the other. And so it's like tiny bit blended, but it's really just more layered. So the eugenoides is on the top, the Serra Azul Geisha is on the bottom, and then the eugenoides is like I don't know, it just worked. I don't even know. I mean, there's definitely some scientific explanation for it, but basically like the eugenoides extracted first, the Serra Azul extracted like with the eugenoides properties already in it, like in the bottom of the portafilter, and it just like made an incredible coffee.
Well, which is, yeah, I would have done the same thing, because if you say it's a denser bean, then it needs a longer extraction time, and the one that coffee that's on top will always have the longer time with the water. And so you get all of the sweetness from that, and then this is going to push through the acidity of the geisha. Amazing. Yep. I wish I would have tried it.
it's really good.
Available? Do you sell them?
We do. So I think we're releasing the eugenoides sometime in the next like month or so. And then we do sell the Serra Azul from time to time, but...
Okay, sorry. There was a little bit of a connection loss. Say again. So you sell those coffees from time to time in your shop. So it's always worth keeping an eye out on your internet shop.
Yep.
And do you do also ship international, right?
We do. Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. I have another question to your performance. And it is a question, because I remember the time when I was sitting in front of the stage and I was like, ooh, I didn't know what to think of it. I found it's brilliant, but it's super risky at the same time. And that was the point where you washed the hands of the judges. And I think that literally, because I was sitting in the crowd, that was literally the thing that like split the crowd. So either they really, really loved it, or they were like, I don't know. I personally thought it's like incredibly risky, because like also like seeing my own reaction, I thought like, well, this could go really either ways depending on where the judges are from, if they're touchy, if they're not touchy, you know, like, because you've got such an international judge panel. What motivated you to perform such a bold move, because it might have been actually the like this step too far, this step too close, this physical touch? Why did you choose to do that?
Yeah, so that was a hotly debated topic the whole preparation time for WBC between my husband and I. And so it started in 2017. I washed the judges' hands at the national level at US, and the point then was that to be a real leader, you have to also be a servant. And so my thought was at the time that I wanted to like do something that really crossed the barrier of between me and the judges, and also just showed that I was like willing to do something different and risky in the name of like both service and also experience. So I, in 2017, when I did it, I also did it with rose water, and it was part of the like experience of the drink that I made at the time. And so we had always thought, if we ever make it to Worlds, we want to do that again, because it was really different. It was special. And even knowing, being part of the culture, it still felt really risky, because you're right, not want to be touched. And it's risky to ask the judges to put their clipboards down. Like, you know, things can go wrong. Like, you can spill stuff. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing. So we just had decided like that the world competition is so incredibly competitive, and it's just, to be on that level, to set yourself apart, we just decided that we had to we had to do something that would help tie the presentation together and also just like help make the judges feel something. So all of my presentations, I'm not a real like science-driven person. I have tons of respect for all of those things that have to go into coffee and the way that everything that's special about coffee is often created by science. I think it's great, but it's just not me. I'm just very service and people focused. And so in order for that, I just felt like that in order for me to be competitive on that level, I had to do something that was ultra special. I would get lost. Even though I had great coffees and I think my flavor calls were awesome and my drinks were incredible, like I had to do something that would really stand out. And so, I mean, I didn't ever imagine that COVID would be so crazy. And so, even going into the competition, I had practiced it a ton and we considered not doing it because I thought I could even maybe score a zero in certain categories for touching the judges. And we finally just decided, we're like, you know what? We came all this way. We put it together. The entire performance hinges on this moment of like, let's just see each other for for the people that we are. Let's move beyond this like incredible like isolation and like just turmoil that we've all been in throughout the pandemic, and let's just be people enjoying coffee. And so yeah, we just did it. And I think it worked, so that's good.
That definitely worked. Yeah. Did the judges say anything in the debrief about it? I'm so curious. What did the judges
Yeah,
think
they
about it?
did. They were really into it. I
Yeah.
mean, I don't know if you could see from where everyone was at, but a lot of them were crying. Like, I
Oh,
was almost
wow.
crying. I mean, it was very intimate. And so I think one of the judges I had in the first round and in the finals, and she did not like it in the first, but she did like it in the finals. And I was really excited about that because I felt like
Convinced
I
her.
won her over. Yeah, I
Yeah.
like won her over. And so yeah, I mean, I think it's, I don't know, I just wanted to do it, and I was really glad that I did. And I had lots of advice and people that told me I should not do it, both for the reasons that you mentioned, the international panel. You just don't know like what is really inappropriate from culture to culture, but also because of COVID, they're like it might really freak people out. And I was like, it's okay, we'll just do it. And like my goal is to win them over before we even get there. Like my goal is for them to trust me before we even get there, before they even know that it's going to happen, so that when we get there, they just go with it. Yeah.
That is, yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't think that anyone in the finals would be placed in the finals if they don't at a certain point have to decide for a bold move or do like a decision
Yeah.
that's going to define not just what they're presenting, but also who they are and who they want to be on this platform and what they want to showcase. So
Yeah.
maybe that's a message for everyone else who's trying to compete in the near future, being like, there's no guarantee. There's never anything that's written on paper that's going to be a success story. Like you can't use formula X epsilon to be safe. There's always these points that you, yeah, where you really have to make a decision. Are you going to compete again? Because it's
No.
difficult as a world number two.
Yeah. I don't think so. I'm really torn about it because
It's been your life
I
since 7 years.
mean, it has been, and
Yeah.
I feel like I would love to win WBC, and having been there now one time, I learned a lot, and so I would love to go back, but the US competition is just so different. And I've been trying to get to WBC for a long time, and it was so hard to get there. And in the US, we traditionally don't have people win twice because there's so many of us and everybody is really good. And so I don't think I'm gonna do it anymore. And which makes me sad. But you know, I was telling my friend a couple of days ago, she's asking me the same thing, and I just said, like, I've been willing to do all of these things and loved doing it. But I want my life to be different. I want to spend more time with my kids, and I want to spend more time just with my like normal job. And I also want for other people in the US circuit to go, you know, and to get that experience. And so I think for me to try to keep going, I don't think it works. I don't think it makes sense, at least not right now. So
How about any other competition, like Girls Cup or cup tasting or Coffee and Good Spirits? Thought about
yeah,
that?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'm in the barista, and I don't know. Maybe someday. I think I might someday. I mean, I'm gonna take a break and
Yeah, I
just
mean,
kind of
fair enough.
chill. And yeah, I'm gonna our national competition is in April this year, so I'm gonna
Are you
go. I'll
coaching
obviously
someone?
be there.
Yeah, are you coaching anyone?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who yet, but one of our team will go. I mean, we always have several competitors in most of the events, so like I'll help our team, and I will probably just volunteer, and I have other friends that are doing it, so I'll like help them if they want my help. But and I just want to kind of like try to give back some to that community, because it really has in so many ways like made or at least helped Onyx get a ton of opportunities in coffee. And so I just want to like go back and like help other people and volunteer at the competition. I mean, you know, the competitions need so many people to help like make it work and make it go. So yeah, I just want to go back and participate in that way and like just be supportive. And I'm like a real encouraging kind of person. Like that's where I find myself a lot. And so I feel like I would eventually maybe like to judge, because I'd love to be in that moment with people, because I've been there where you've like worked really hard for a long time and you like didn't do well. You didn't do what you wanted to do. And like I would love to be in that moment with people and just be like, hey, I've been there, like I've been last, and this isn't the end, and it doesn't like define who you are, you know.
Absolutely not. You know what's one of the most
Yeah.
inspiring things that I've ever heard? It's about Sasha Sestik. So he competed so many times, and it must have been the year before he won Worlds. Or maybe 2 years before. It was very close to before he actually won Worlds. There was a judge who said to him, "Please don't come back. Please don't do this anymore. You're always so bad." Which is incredible how many times we have to be bad before we can really excel and succeed until this like switch clicks where you're just like, that's the rules. Sometimes you still. Oh, I ended up really good. I still don't know the rules. But yeah, stories like these, like you competing for so many years in a row, just like fighting and fighting and fighting, getting all the way up there, then finally being in Worlds and yeah, showing everyone that this wasn't an accident. This wasn't a coincidence. Yeah, like you obviously have like such a gigantic skill set and you've performed so well and you were so calm.
Thanks.
And yeah, other competitors that I've already talked to about in the podcast and how many times they had to go up, and then how some people still don't understand how they won. And some people are just like fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting. And I think it would be such a great thing to then, in your position, what you're already doing, like is giving back to the community, coaching other people, being just with them, being at their side. Volunteering at those events, which is incredibly important. And yeah, I think becoming a judge is incredibly exhausting for some reason. I feel so, I don't know if it's because we are competitors that we think like they're gods and that is the unreachable level of like the things that you have to endure. But I think they're also just like people like us. I think it's a thing that we can actually learn.
No, I think so. I would like to do it, but you're right, it's really exhausting. And our national show happens at our trade show as well, and so like I have so many thoughts on judging, and I know that's not why you wanted to talk to me, but I don't know how we could ever make this happen, but I'm very for like the concept of, hiring judges and paying them for their time
Absolutely,
and,
absolutely, yes.
providing more training than, and, just having it be more of a professional path than it is. And when I say
Yeah, just yeah.
everyone that's coming is obviously incredibly talented, incredibly generous of their time and their energy. And like, I think it's a real, for me, it's a real shame that like those judges are not compensated for their time. And I
It's the
think that,
worst system. Yeah, it's
yeah, if,
incredible. Especially also in Europe. I don't know how it is in the US, but it's like so many people from all over the place. They drive,
yeah.
they come from other countries,
Yep.
they get a hotel stay and that's it. And it's so unfair. And as an SCA member, a lot of the times I'm just like, cool, where do all my money, where does the where do I would
Yeah.
love that the part of money that I have to give to compete in those competitions would go to those judges.
Yeah.
Because that's what I would
I
assume.
agree.
And that's what
Yeah.
I think is important. I think it is the most important thing in the future for coffee, for especially Coffee Association, to change that system and to actually pay the judges. Because
Yeah,
how many
I think
times
so
are
too.
we standing after competitions being like, oh, well, this judge said this, this judge said that, this just said that,
Yep.
this person's outside drinking and smoking.
Yep.
It's because it is so unrewarded, and it because it is so unregulated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
And it kind of
absolutely. And I
goes down
think,
to like a year of practice for the competitor, like a year of
yeah.
practice down the drain, because you're just like, oh, been
Yeah.
judged by different people.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
I've had things. I mean, we've all had these experiences, right? But I mean, I've had things where like I made a one year I made a batched signature drink. So it was all the same drink and it was split up into four cups and one judge scored me a two and everybody else scored me like a 5.5. And that was the difference in me winning. And afterwards I asked the head judge, I said, "Hey, like where's the calibration on this?" And honestly, I'm not usually like a big like I don't go to my debrief and like fight for points. I mean, I'm usually in my debrief just like, "Hey,
It's also
thanks for
hard
coming."
because
'Cause I yeah, I
you're
know you
like you
just
can't change anything anymore. Yeah.
no, you can't change it. And also I am always really cognizant of like, "Hey, these people just like drove across the country and spent 5 days like just drinking espresso after espresso just so they can come to the debriefs and get yelled at by people." Like, so I'm always very like I try to be kind and positive. And this actually happened later. I had a call with the head judge like a month later because I like to talk to them very much during like right after because I need time to look at the sheets and everything. But yeah, I just asked them, I said, "Hey, like this is not how this is supposed to happen." And and it just came down to like one judge had one experience and one and the rest of them had a different experience. And I think that's very valid. And I think that that part of the competition does make sense. But at the same time, I'm like, there should be more of a training and more calibration than just the, and in the US, it's like a day that the judges come early and calibrate. And I'm like, hey, if this was more of a like profession, if it was a certificate, if it was a something you have to pass into every year, then like we would just have judges that are more calibrated. And you know what? Maybe I should have scored a two all four of them, and maybe the other three weren't calibrated, or maybe I should have scored a 5.5 on all four of them, or something like that. But I think that when, especially when the competitors are spending so much time and also so much money with on these coffees and like just doing it, it's like it's just an interesting situation. So I hope that someday it can change and evolve for the better and just honestly be more beneficial for both judges and competitors.
It's very interesting because more and more and more of the voices of, I'd say maybe our generation of competitors, because we're compared to like the new generation, a little bit like, yeah, we're a little bit older. But a lot of our people, like Dashwood, and like I've just talked to many people over 35, and they all competed quite a lot of times, and they all say the same thing. They're like, we've seen this so many years, and back in 2010, okay, well, it was a different time, it was still a different standard, and it was still like a different money that was involved from the competitor side. And I think now, 11 years later, we just seriously have to like see the investment that competitors take in their hands to compete in those things. Mm-hmm. Oh God, yeah. Such a hot topic.
It is hot. Yeah, I know. I feel like I have lots of ideas. Yeah, I mean, I think they could get a sponsorship for paying judges. I mean, there's all kinds of ideas.
They get so many sponsorships for the machines and for everything. It's like they've It's just, find one more.
So, and I know they're doing everything they can, and I know especially SCA is struggling just with the pandemic. I mean, I know it's hard for everyone, so it's more, I think for me, it's just more of an advocation for things to continue to grow and change. And you know, I'd love if any of sponsors are out there listening to this, I think it's a good idea. Come find me. So.
Also, it's maybe a very great motivation for young baristas or barista that are thinking about competing. That's a little trick that I got from my Australian friends. A lot of them got their judges qualification to understand what is being judged. They worked as judges, and they at the same time then trained or coached others for other competitions, obviously, because it's the conflict of interest. You can't judge competitors, you know, but the more skilled young judges we have, or not, doesn't matter how old, but the more skilled judges we have, the better we will be represented in the future. And I see that judging is such a, it becomes more and more of a unattractive thing to do, and that's why, especially in Germany as well, like we're always short on judges, always short, because it's just not enough. If you really, really want to know what you have to do when you compete, become a judge.
Yeah, that's a great word.
Andrea, we've been talking over an hour. And
we could keep going.
I know.
We could go forever, probably.
It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, same.
It's been so many things we covered, and as I said in the beginning, I'm so excited to finally meet a person that you're one of the few podcast guests that I don't know in person. Like, we've never really chatted before. It is great how the world of coffee brings people, and especially people from different nationalities, together to sit on the same table and chat, and then realizing that we have so many common thoughts on so many things is really amazing.
Yeah.
When would be the next big thing in the US happening where you would advise people to come over?
Yeah, so our SCA Expo is going to be in Boston in April. So that's the next that's the next big thing. And I've
and it's where the
since we talked about batch brew, I don't know what your experience at trade shows is, but my experience is that I'm always dying for coffee, and I can only get a teeny tiny little cup of coffee anywhere I go. So at the expo this year, I'm just going to do my own booth, and I'm just going to call it Batches. Oh. And I'm going to just give away batch brew.
Amazing.
In the competition area. I'm very excited. And I need to find a sponsor. I haven't done any of the work yet, but you should come and get a batch brew from me there, because that's how passionate I am about it.
I mean, there's probably if there's cup tasting happening as well, the world's sponsor of cup tasting is Mocha Master. So maybe Mocha Master US might be interested in sponsoring your booth.
I love Mocha Master. I think they're great. So
I mean, I'm obsessed with them.
I need to send out some emails, and maybe I'll get them to sponsor you to you to come over and help me at batch.
Oh,
That'd be fun.
interesting, interesting.
I
Yeah, that
clearly
would be
just think
great.
sponsors should take responsibility for everything.
Well, then the next thing that you
Oh.
might want to come to would be on the, oh, it's around the 22nd of June, in Warsaw. There's the World of Coffee Awareness Latte Art Championship and Coffee and Good Spirits Championship. I think break, and I don't know if there's cup tasters as well. But then everything that I didn't say would probably be in Melbourne at MICE in September. So the world is going to meet each other at one of those events, definitely. I'm making sure that I'll be obviously in Warsaw because that's like a stone throw away from Berlin. And in Melbourne to meet all of my Australian friends again. And because this is just going to be a great exhibition, really advise you to go there as well because Australian coffee scene is just. It's just another thing. It's just another level. Seeing how they approach customer service and how they have frozen coffee bars implemented in their coffee shops is
That's cool.
amazing. It's like a Willy Wonka's for us. And I had the benefit to work for them for a year. And that is their day-to-day business. Just like, oh, you want the best coffee from 2019? No problem. Here, I have a frozen dose. Shall I make it for you? You get the full explanation about this coffee with a
That's
spreadsheet. Now,
cool.
here is a timer to show you when to drink, how many sips. Oh, it was just the best
That's
thing I've ever
awesome.
seen. I was just so passionate about everything. So yeah, definitely please come there. You'll definitely get invited now that you're the superstar of
I
brewstering.
hope so. Yeah, I want to go. So invite me. Whoever you are out there, just bring me. I'll come.
I don't want to take any more of your time on the last day of this beautiful year. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. Now actually is the time for you to say anything that you want to say out there to our listeners, if you want to say where to find you, if you want to say what's, I don't know, the next big thing at your roastery. There you go.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's been really great, and I appreciate everybody taking the time to listen to us talk about coffee. And y'all can follow us at Onyx Coffee Lab. And I just say for the new year, everybody be nice to each other. Let's make it a great year. So
Yeah, that's a nice message for the end. Thank you so much, Andrea, and I'm saying goodbye.
all right, goodbye.
So, at this point, I would like to thank Rancilio Germany for supporting this podcast. And I am just absolutely blown away by how well we connected during this interview. And it really just shows me how amazing coffee is because it truly connects people all over the world. It doesn't really matter where you are or who you are at the moment. It's like this coffee thing we all have in common. And having the opportunity to chat with such an incredible woman in the industry made me so happy because it really showed me that talking about fears and worries as a woman is something that I personally am always really afraid of. But this fear has really no substance and no reason because Andrea is the perfect example how to combine work and family. Thank you so much for listening. And if you have any questions, just reach out to me on my website, which is nicolebutterfeld.com, or on my Instagram, which is nbutterfeld. And I wish you a wonderful week and tune in next time. Thank you so much.